Hello and welcome to the May edition of On the Horizon, our monthly podcast dedicated to helping you to navigate through the tricking world of golf course turf maintenance by helping you to look and think a little further forward. I'm Henry Beshley from ICL.
And I'm Glenn Kirby from Syngenta. This month, Henry, we're going to be asking the big questions, like, will leather jackets continue to thrive? Will seed heads cause surface quality to dive? And when will consistent growth finally arrive?
So, Glenn, although it is still vitally important, we are going to try to shorten the weather section a touch, aren't we? And just keep to the main points.
Yes, indeed. We've pushed you all to the limit and you've stuck it out.
Yeah, well done, everyone.
Look, feel free to shout if you want more detail, but we're going to kick into summary mode a little bit earlier unless you plead for the data-heavy stuff to come back.
Yes, we might be wrong, but let's give a shortened weather section a go. Take it away, Glenn. What could the weather bring for us in May?
Well, Henry, May is another month where it has the potential to be extremely challenging. Pretty much anything could happen.
Yeah, we've had a run of them recently, haven't we?
Indeed, it could be extremely wet, it could be extremely dry, it could be genuinely hot, especially down south. In fact, if we look around the country, the highest recently recorded temperatures are as high as 27 degrees down in Poole, 26 degrees up in Turnberry in Scotland, but cooler over in Dublin with a high of just 22 over there in the month of May in recent years.
That is interesting. And of course, you know, we are hopefully on the verge of summer, aren't we, at the end of the month. But I guess there could also be some significant frosts about still, especially at the start of the month with those bright, crisp and hopefully cheerful spring days.
Yeah, indeed. Lowest recent recorded temperatures we've seen are as low as -3 up in Turnberry, -2 in Dublin, and down there in Sunnypool, they hit the lowest in the recent years of 0 in the month of May. So cool weather still definitely on the agenda, Henry.
Yeah, absolutely. But those are the extremes, aren't they? So how do the average temperatures look for May?
Well, they're pretty disappointing, Henry. Poole, which I always find is one of the warmest places in the country, is averaging around 13 degrees in the month of May. Turnberry up there in Scotland, 10.5 degrees through the month of May. And over in Dublin, in Ireland, 11.5 degrees. And this is where I think we all start to get pretty frustrated. We start waiting for those consistent temperatures to arrive. And if I'm honest, Henry, looking at the numbers, it's generally not till that last week of May or beginning of June that consistent temperatures are a given.
Okay, so lots of potential for it to still be cold and growth not consistently kicking in until the end of the month or later. And of course, it can be dull and wet too, can't it, Glenn?
Indeed, rainfall is always in the game, Henry, but on average, it's not a wet month. I've pulled rainfall out for the three locations that we mentioned earlier. Poole averages at 44 millimetres, Turnberry 61 millimetres, and Dublin 34 millimetres. Turnberry looks most likely to get hit hard, with 6 years in the 14 in my data set over 80 millimetres in the month of May. Dublin hasn't seen that level of rain in May since 2008. And the last time Poole saw a really wet month in May was 2008 as well, when they saw 108 millimetres.
So it can be a wet month, but the agronomic odds for most of us is for it to be a dry one. Okay, so how's the evapotranspiration looking at this time?
Well, that's ramped up a notch again, Henry. Poole averages 95 millimetres moisture loss, Turnberry averaging at 85 millimetres moisture loss, and Dublin averaging 88 millimetres moisture loss.
Wow. So significantly more evapotranspiration than rainfall now. Of course, We can always have that wet May, but it looks like our turf this month is going to need to have some good soil moisture management in place. You know, the irrigation system's on, the hoses out, moisture probes at the ready, and of course the wetting agent programmes firmly in place.
But we are just on the edge of stress territory here, Henry. Temperatures in May are only just going to bring those secondary stresses occasionally. So dry root zones can easily go unnoticed this month, limiting those root development opportunities.
So this is a really challenging time, isn't it, for course managers, you know, who have been fully occupied trying to transition the course through to its summer condition and have it ready very much during this time. And so those suboptimal growing conditions that can loom over the horizon in May can make it the most difficult and frustrating time.
Indeed, consistent growth has not yet arrived, has it? We've got high potential to be dry. Overnight temperatures are staying stubbornly low. The odds of summer arriving are frustratingly low. But we do love a long shot, don't we? So come on, British summer, you can do it.
Be careful what you wish for, Glenn. Okay, so May is here. We've had a couple of the majors already, and I hate to say it, but we're already approaching the longest days of the year. And this is it. The main golfing season is now in full swing. Board competitions, club championships and Captain's Day all on the horizon, and maybe a golf week thrown in. It might only be May, Glenn, but things have really ramped up a notch or two, haven't they, since last month? So it's all systems go.
Yeah, expectation is now sky high, Henry. And we noticed in the climatic section that the weather isn't likely to be playing ball just yet either. It's likely and frustratingly dragging its heels until the last week of May. Now, we'll see lots of waves of great weather in there. Hopefully those waves will be getting stronger and longer and they'll play into our hands this year, but they just can't be relied upon just yet.
No, so once again, we have that mismatch between expectations and reality, or what is possible and what is realistic. But we do our best, don't we, even in the face of this adversity, to try and come up trumps every time.
But you're all fighting against nature. But you do it with so much passion and pride. It's a month where you should take all the compliments with pride too. Write them down, share them with your team, because there will be flak flying about at some point in the month of May. Some less than tactful golfer will make a silly remark. It's probably not meant in the way you'll take it. And some members really, really struggle to communicate in an effective way. And they just don't know how hard it is to deliver the standards that you are on a regular basis, particularly at this time of year.
Yeah, a thick skin is needed in this game, isn't it? Is there anything that we can do to ready ourselves for this, Glenn?
Well, whilst it's of no use now, coming through the winter really clean makes this a much easier period to deal with when you're talking to the membership. If you need no recovery, this May journey is far easier. And much easier than if you're recovering from disease damage and traffic damage and animal damage and all those things that really you're looking for growth to get recovery from. Communication, again, is critical. And I often wonder if we should just have a great big sign up at this time of year at the entrance saying something like, the weather isn't yet on our side, but we're doing our absolute best to give you the golf course that you deserve. I often think compliments also come at a time when the job is easiest.
Yeah, now that is interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, I always felt the pats on the back that I used to get and the well done's from the membership. They just came at a time where things were easy. Mother Nature was on our side. I could actually finish work on time and go home and see my family. And at times when we had the space to get in amongst golf and do the work. However, the negative comments, which often weren't meant in that way, but I was particularly sensitive to them because I was generally grafting at my absolute limit and giving far more to the club than I probably should have been. And I think that's why it always felt so personal, because just when you're giving your absolute most because you want it to be better is exactly when you get the least support.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a thankless job at times, Glenn, isn't it?
Indeed. Look, fingers crossed that those spring waves in May are going to kind of land really favourably for us this year, and all the compliments are flying around, And when they do come, treasure them, because a compliment in May is a compliment you've really earned. Mm. And, you know, filter out the negative ones, knowing that you are laying the foundations for something truly special next month.
Yeah, but May might be a grind, but summer, hopefully, is just around the corner, isn't it?
Oh, I hope so, Henry. Okay, Henry, so what are the agronomic risks that we might need to be aware of in the month of May?
Well, as we've already said, it is a potentially frustrating time, isn't it? With us still being reliant on those favourable waves of weather to keep growth moving and allow us to get the wider course and the greens in particular up to scratch. But we can use nutrition through this time to accelerate recovery or maximise those positive periods to help finish things off. And of course, it might go the other way. You know, growth might be charging full steam ahead and our plant growth regulators become the key.
Yeah, we should, hopefully, you know, if those waves fall positively for us this year, which I'm hoping they will, we should all be well into our Primo programs by now.
Yeah, and as you've already mentioned, it's likely that towards the end of the month, some stress might actually enter the game if temperatures begin to rise into the mid-20s, heaven forbid. And the result of this first stress of the year, in my experience anyway, comes the ultimate insult in greenkeeping, Glenn, I think.
Oh, the ultimate insult, Henry. Yeah. There's quite a few insults in greenkeeping. I'm interested to know what the ultimate insult is.
Well, just when we get the greens into shape, that first touch of stress causes the annual meadowgrass to begin flowering or seeding and ruin everything for the next few weeks.
Yes, seed heads, the turf manager's nightmare.
Yeah, and you're going to talk about that in more detail later on, aren't you?
Yeah, I'll give it my best shot.
And of course, soil management is also a part of the way in which we can mitigate turf stress at this time. So hopefully the TriSmart and Quilibra programs are already well underway by now.
Yes, and we spoke about that last month, didn't we?
We did. And you're going to talk about wetting agent formulations a little later on as well, aren't you?
I am, because the components or the formulation of wetting agents can really affect that product performance at this time of year. It's important we make the right decisions.
Yes, it is. And I look forward to that. And we also mentioned last month that fairy ring activity might start entering the game in earnest at this time. And for type 1 rings, they might start causing real problems during dry conditions. And so a proactive approach to their management and control should also be well underway if it's an issue for you during May. So again, listen back to last month if you need some more detailed advice on that subject as well.
Yeah, those April issues that we chatted about last month can build and build and build into May if the weather plays out. Mm. You know, if we start moving into this dry and then hot conditions.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it is a time when things can start building, isn't it? The risk of damaging disease activity shouldn't be particularly high at this time unless we experience some particularly extreme conditions, you know, like, I don't know, long wet periods for Microdochium patch to raise its head, which we actually tend to grow out at this time if possible.
Yeah, or we could just put some Instrata Elite on the shelf and, you know, set ourselves a threshold. But by May, surely the temperatures for consistent growth will be arriving.
Yeah, it tends to grow out at this time, doesn't it? Extremely hot and dry conditions, though, might actually trigger some anthracnose. We shouldn't really be in the dollar spot zone just yet. You know, it is an increasing problem for a lot of course managers. But the nighttime temperatures in May are still quite low, so that shouldn't be an issue. In general, actually, disease activity isn't a massive issue at this time, is it, Glenn?
No, that's right. Dollar spot does seem to be becoming a bigger challenge for some year on year, but I suspect June is the earliest we might experience that. So that's one we should definitely talk about next month. But this month, Henry, you've chosen to talk a bit about anthracnose, though, haven't you?
I have indeed, Glenn.
Why have you done that? I mean, the risk is low. Surely that's later in the summer we'll be seeing that problem.
Yeah, but I think that, you know, actually what we do now can have a big influence on how things play out later on in the summer. And so this month I'm looking a bit further beyond the horizon to try and get in front of that.
Very good, Henry. On the horizon at its finest. Mm. I'm going to be interested to hear your thoughts on that one, because we spent most of last year talking about anthracnose, didn't we, and trying to get in front of it. And you think we need to get even further ahead of it than we were talking last year.
I do, Glenn. And we'll talk about that in a bit. But moving on, I think we might still be seeing the impact of some leather jacketing chafer grub activity in May, all those kind of secondary pests going after them.
Yeah, leather jackets will be pupating soon, so that will be happening through the end of May, or sorry, end of April through May, maybe into the end of May. And then the kind of damage becomes less of an issue, but chafer grubs could still be active, depending on the species, and possibly more of a problem, especially in hot, dry conditions, when we start to see some stress really exaggerate that damage. And so stress mitigation strategies through here really come to the fore. You know, maximising irrigation and nutrition are the key to getting through this.
Yeah, we've talked about that in recent episodes as well, haven't we? But, you know, now we're approaching that time when we might be seeing adult beetles and crane flies on the wing in May. And so we need to keep logging those sightings, don't we, on Pest Tracker. And also starting to think about treating possible infestations with acelaprin. So, Glenn, what's the latest on acelaprin? Are we anywhere near getting a full approval yet?
Still waiting, Henry. Okay. And but I know you've applied for another emergency authorisation in case it doesn't arrive.
Yes.
But we continue to be in the hands of the authorities with both of these, don't we?
Yes, we are. And fingers crossed, you know. But, you know, hopefully something will come through and we'll all be able to sort of cope with, you know, this, because it's a massive issue for everyone. Weeds can also be an issue at this time as well, Glenn. And I know that we are also hoping for the approval of a new Syngenta selective herbicide, aren't we? Any time now, I believe.
Yep, I'm looking forward to that one, because we've got some really, really nice trial data on how to get the very best results out of it. So I'm looking forward to sharing that with everyone when that registration lands. So watch this space.
Very good, Glenn. So for me, the agronomic risks in May could be actually many and varied, but they all hang around the establishment of growth and, you know, us guarding against the development of stress, I think.
Yeah, the beginning of the month can be very different from the end.
Yes.
As well. So we need to be on our toes. We also need to be looking at the forecast, see what's looming over that horizon.
Yeah, it's definitely not time to settle down into our summer routines just yet, is it, Glenn?
No, but it's getting very close, Henry.
Ooh.
So in the second half, we're going to be talking about annual meadow grass seed heads.
Or flowers, Glenn, but let's stick with seed heads for now.
Okay, Henry. And let's have a think about what we can do now to reduce the risk of anthracnose later in the year.
Yes, and you're going to do a bit on wetting agent formulations.
I am.
Okay, so that sounds really good, but I'm ready for a cuppa now, Glenn.
It's a bit early, Henry. But I'm always up for a cuppa.
Yeah, I know what you mean. We are rattling through this, aren't we? But get the kettle on anyway. Welcome back to part two of the May edition of On the Horizon. And what I want to know, Glenn, is, how was Harrogate? Because I got struck down by COVID on the Sunday beforehand and couldn't come over. Did anyone do a listener approaching?
Yeah, we got a few, Henry. A particular shout out to my good friends Yestin and Matt Plested for screaming at me.
Yes.
In a very confident manner from across the hall.
They can always be relied upon, those two, can't they?
Yeah. Thanks, gents. And a very respectful and polite listener approaching from Sam. I think it was Sam. I chatted to so many people, I lost track. Mm. And we handed out a lot of badges as well, Henry.
Excellent.
So wear them with pride, people.
Indeed. I haven't got one yet, actually. So anyway, send one up. Anyway, look.
Irony of that.
I know. I was really sorry to miss it, actually. And hopefully everything will be back to normal next year.
Indeed. A big shout out to the Woodhorse Bar team as well, who told me all about their podcast Fridays.
Yeah, I know that lot very well. Well, hi, fellas. I think we've got a date in the diary, actually, to come over and see you. What's Podcast Friday, Glenn?
Well, Friday lunchtimes, they put a podcast on and listen to it in its entirety whilst eating their sandwiches. Oh. So they love ours, Henry, as it makes their lunchtime a bit longer. They did actually request a 3-hour special so they could do less work on a Friday afternoon.
Well, that would be our pleasure, fellas. I have certainly got a lot to say about fairway aeration, if you're interested.
Sounds riveting, Henry. I can just imagine Sam there rolling his eyes and cursing us right
now. Yeah, well, that wouldn't be the first time. Anyway, what about the music change, Glenn?
Well, there was a big groundswell towards a bit of swing, Henry.
Really? I just don't think I could pull off that swing persona for more than a few seconds.
I've already gone out and bought a tuxedo, though, Henry.
Whatever you do in private, Glenn, that is your own business. But regardless, Kevin refused outright to let us change the music.
Never liked that man much.
Anyway, what are you drinking this month, Glenn?
Lemsip, Henry. Oh. The damn COVID bug has got me again.
Oh, no. What flavour?
Lemon, but only because I've run out of blackcurrant.
And how is it?
Citrusy with a hint of paracetamol. What about you, Henry? What are you on this month?
Well, my tea journey continues down the herbal route this month, Glenn, with a recommendation from Andy Owen, whose opinions, you know, I regard as being the absolute gospel.
What, even on tea? I'm sorry, I've got huge respect for Andy Owen, but the only tea recommendation he ever gave me was to put honey in it, and I tried it, and it was horrible. What did he point you towards? His tea recommendations are not to be trusted.
No. Well, maybe not. No, it was fennel tea.
Oh, for goodness sake, Henry.
No, look, honestly, it's really nice. It's aniseed flavour, and so it reminds you of your childhood. And it also soothes your digestive system at the same time. And for a man of my age, these are both real benefits.
Andy, I hold you in such high regard on so many fronts, but please get a grip.
Shall we crack on, Glenn?
Please.
So, seed heads, Glenn.
Yes, May is the month when putting surfaces could and should come together nicely. We'll get a brief spell of greatness when those consistent temperatures finally arrive. And then just as we feel like we've cracked it, boom. Seed heads pop up and ruin it for everyone.
Yes, the spring flush of annual meadowgrass flowers or seed heads can be a real kick in the teeth, putting it politely, for the course manager who has spent the last couple of months wrestling through the difficult spring after a long winter, fighting with every tool in their armoury to get the surfaces into shape, only to be
kicked in the proverbials.
Yeah, it's probably the key weakness of annual meadowgrass dominance, isn't it, Glenn?
Yeah, it's one of those things that we've just got to learn to live with and manage best we can if we're going to continue to produce annual meadowgrass dominated surfaces, Henry.
Yep, Poa annua is actually a plant that is not adapted to withstand stress. It is more about reproduction. And so when the first signs of stress arrives, either with high temperatures, dry weather, or both, or say a drying surface courtesy of a sort of desiccating breeze that can be quite common at this time, right at the end of spring or the start of summer, then the first thing that the Poa annua does, I think, is pop out those flowers or seed heads in order to reproduce, which not only causes a significant reduction in playing quality, but the like the resource expenditure that the plant uses to create those flowers or seeds also seems to affect the general health of the plant. And so it's also not a surprise to see some disease activity, microdochium patch disease especially, associated with it. I do quite a lot of trials at this time, Glenn, and so I see it happen every year.
Now, you and me differ a little on this one, don't we, Henry? You're a man that believes this is a stress-related problem, and so there's lots of benefits to stress relief that can counter that challenge, whereas I personally tend to think that the triggering of the seed heads or flowers is stressed by a bit of plant physiology, such as day length or temperature, rather than triggered by stress.
No, I think that the initiation is provoked by stress, but I don't necessarily think that there's a huge amount that can be done about it, it being a natural part of the plant life cycle. It is certainly an area that I would like to explore, you know, in more detail, actually.
Yeah, I'd love to get into it in some more depth as well. There's some big knowledge gaps in there. But, however, I do mostly agree with what you're saying, that the more stress we have, the more prolific the seeding is once it's triggered. What triggers it? That's the question mark for me.
Yes, and you know, and we both agree that it's extremely, extremely frustrating and damaging, both in visual terms and, of course, because it can adversely affect the surface playing qualities, making the green slower and more uneven, which is the exact opposite of what we are trying to achieve at this time. You must have had this in your time as a course manager, Glenn. What was it like to be on the receiving end of the annual meadowgrass seeding season?
Very frustrating. Those seed heads, you always knew they were going to come, except the very rare situation where you were managing a putting surface with no perennial in it. And that's pretty rare in the UK. There's always going to be a percentage of perennial in most people's swards, and probably higher than most people want to believe. But you always knew if you got that perennial in there, it was going to seed. So you knew it was coming. And when you know something's coming, you can put some management in place, or the least you can do is communicate it to key people in your club. When you've got a high poa-dominated sward where you've got really consistent poa over it, then it's less impactful on those putting surfaces, and it can be masked to some extent with irons or pigments. But the clubs that have got kind of newer constructed greens, they're the ones with more of a challenge when you've got early establishing perennial grass, you know, just kind of creeping in amongst the creeping bent or the brown top and fescue. And when it hasn't distributed itself very well, then it gets very ugly and very disruptive. And they're the people that really struggle to maintain a decent putting surface through this period. I mean, we went through a horrible phase when I worked at a big club in Kent for a number of years where we had creeping bent greens. And we just went through that whole period of poa becoming dominant. And I found myself wishing for more and more poa in the end, so at least we had consistent putting surfaces.
Well, we're in disturbance theory territory here, Glenn, aren't we? But let's stick to the seeding itself, you know, for the moment. Is there anything in the research that would be helpful here in terms of us understanding when it's going to happen and also how best to mitigate it?
Now, I've had a little dig around on this, Henry, and there's one fully researched model out there that I found. Dr. Danneberger and Dr. Vargas, they put it together in the 80s using growth degree days. And they used a base temperature here of 10 degree days and 60 growth degree days on a 10 degree day model. And what they saw, that's when they were seeing the kind of beginning of poa seed heads. Now, if we break that down to what it really means, it means once you start averaging 10 degrees on a daily basis for a short period of time, you're likely to see some seed heads. So now I've plugged that model into some historic data looking at Bingley. And that model over the last 5 years shows that the poa seed head period was kind of from the last week of April through to the end of May, kind of spread out like that. And that feels about right. But models like this imply that it all happens on one day. You're going to hit that target and all of a sudden it's going to explode. And that's not the reality. The reality is it's a long phase with a peak and a kind of trough at the end. And from my experience, that peak always seemed to land on a bank holiday weekend.
Yeah, just when you've got no labour and a four-day week to catch up with everything else. Typical. Any thoughts on seed head management tricks, Glenn?
Well, whilst I think the timing is less to do with stress and more to do with plant physiological response, I do agree that avoiding stress is the key to managing. Now, that's really easy to say, but it's not easy to do, because at this time of year, it's critical that we produce a decent putting surface. It's our very reason for doing what we do. The harder we work that surface, the more we stress the plant. It's a never-ending negative feedback loop. All of those little tools that we've got in our armory, like brushes, verticuts, groomers, all the things that we do to get us through this difficult period with satisfied customers, they also contribute to the stress and therefore the problem.
And this is why May is such an extremely difficult time, isn't it? On the one hand, we're trying to limit the development of stress, and at the same time, we're also trying to intensify the maintenance programme. There's a lot of competing environmental pressures going on here, Glenn, and they're obviously quite tricky to manage.
Feels like that disturbance theory chat is getting closer and closer, Henry. You can't run away forever.
No, the Woodall boys will be delighted when I get started back on that. Anyway, that's another time. What about the use of Primo Max then to help mitigate the adverse impacts of annual meadowgrass seed head production? Is there anything to be learned there?
Well, you can certainly use Primo Max to regulate growth and tighten the sward down and keep those seed heads lower in their culm, so they've got less of an impact on that putting surface. There is some research data to support Trinexpac E4 in reducing seed heads as well, but it's a very small amount of seed head suppression and not enough to put on a label or recommend it to be used in that way. Anything other than digital analysis will really struggle to put it out. In fact, I'm not sure I'd ever recommend any plant growth regulator as a seed head suppression tool in the UK, but they can certainly be used to create better surfaces.
Yeah, but it would be interesting to know how much of a reduction you get, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and we've done some trial work looking at this and competitor products, Henry, and all gibberellic acid inhibitors do pretty much the same thing. You get a small amount of suppression in seed heads, but not enough to notice. And that's the same for all the gibberellic acid inhibitors in the UK market. But if you wanted to understand what you were getting out of your plant growth regulator, there's a really easy way to look at it. You can drop down some knockout boards on your surface, a kind of small, maybe 30 by 30 centimeter square. Just lie it down somewhere on the green. And before you spray, and then you spray over the top of it, and then you know that square, and you can do it on three or four greens, you know that square doesn't get that application. So you can come back and look at that, and if you can see you've got more seed heads in there than you have the rest of the green, it's done something. If you could never pick that square out again in the future, then you know you probably didn't achieve any seed head suppression of any value. We do have some other management options as well to us, though, Henry. You can possibly look to pigment technology to help mitigate that stress driving into that period. And it will also help mask the colour differentiation of that wheat-looking sward and those seed heads or flowers. And that might help you get through this period. And you can certainly look to iron-based products to help with that as well. And tank mixes like the fortnightly mix, which you and me did some work on a few years back, where we've got Vitanova Stress Buster in there, Quilibra, Primo, Rider, all those things in that fortnightly mix are there to help reduce stress and get you through this difficult period.
This is what that tank mix is all about, really, isn't it? Anyway, anything else we should be thinking about?
Yeah, we really need to think about cutting heights at this time, and we need to recognise that the temptation is going to be there to drop those cutting heights down. You know, we spoke to Tom a couple of months back about this now, about how low we are already and how newer technology cuts lower than we believe. So we've really got to be careful with this. We need to think about how we can avoid it, because we're chasing our tails with this one. We're cutting lower, inducing more stress, more seed heads, so trying to cut lower again, and it's never-ending circle. But we have to accept that the temptation is going to be there. Look, just keep using your prism gauge to understand where you really are at, understand the quality of that cut and how low it is. Really think about your moisture levels and try and get them in an appropriate area. Think about appropriate nutrition. Think about using Primo to keep that seed head lower in the culm. Think about using a pigment maybe to mask the appearance of it, and just do all you can to help yourself minimise stress.
All good, sound advice, Glenn. Now, Glenn, you wanted to talk about wetting agent technology, didn't you?
That's right, I did, Henry. As we move into this period of the year, when we can start to see several different types of stress appear, it's possible that we're going to see some dry patch about. And this got me thinking about wetting agent choices, Henry.
Yeah, there are some important decisions to be made at this time. So very loosely speaking, we have a couple of main surfactant groups that are available to us. The first type being the penetrant type technologies that is designed to help water move through the root zone by reducing its surface tension. And the second type of, shall we say, water conservation agents being more moisture retentive type technology that is designed to retain moisture when it's in the root zone.
Indeed, and there are a few misconceptions wrapped up around these I'd like to address today.
Yes.
The first misconception is the belief or the misconception that penetrant type technology will help drive roots down due to the nature of flushing water through the root zone. And the second one I want to pick up on is the misconception that retentive wetting agents, those water conservation agents, hold more moisture, so will lead to more disease, more thatch accumulation, and reduced quality of playing surfaces. Now, these are all things that we at Syngenta are really interested in as well as you, the customer. And to go back to a point that you made last month, Henry, it is in our interest, both at Syngenta and ICL, just to give really, really good advice. So we do a lot of work behind the scenes to ensure that the advice that we give is good and sound.
We do indeed, Glenn.
So I want to roll the clock back to 2016. It was a couple of years before I started at Syngenta, and this trial was set up by my predecessor, Marcela Munoz, who is a very smart cookie, and she was very interested in this subject as well. And we wanted to look into, in this trial, the interactions between various wetting agents and their types and how they interact with the root zone and its ability to hold moisture. Now, we did this trial over 2 years to ensure the results were consistent. And when you sit down and you read through the trial report, it all becomes clear. Now, if you are a reader of the Greencast Advisory blog, you might have seen it already. If you're not, go and have a look at that. Because if you're a graph fan, all of the trial data is in there, so pop over to that and take a look.
So talk me through it, Glenn.
Well, we looked at a number of different wetting agents of both types, retentive and penetrant. And what we wanted to understand was how much did they impact moisture content? Did the wetting agents impact firmness of the surface?
Mm-hmm.
How effective were they at reducing dry patch? How much of an impact did we have on turf quality by using those different technologies? And did we generate more organic matter when we were using wetting agents?
Wow, they're all big questions, Glenn, aren't they? So probably best if we start at the beginning. How much did they impact on soil moisture content then?
Well, a bit of background on the trial. We ran two trials alongside each other, both with a number of penetrant wetters and retentive wetters in there. And there are also some untreated plots. And in one of the trial, we maintained the untreated plot at less than 20% volumetric moisture content. So we were trying to keep it dry. But what we did is we applied consistent water across the whole plot, allow us to assess consistently what the same amount of water delivered across all those technologies. And in the other plot, we maintained the untreated between 25 and 30% volumetric moisture content. And we consistently applied water over that one across the whole trial, just so we could understand the impact in that one too.
Oh, very nice trial setup, Glenn. So we got a sort of dry side and a not so dry side. Okay, so hit me with a summary of the findings.
So in the drier trial, we saw some interesting differences. In the untreated plots, where they were staggered between 10 to 15%, the penetrants that we compared looked exactly the same as the untreated. So there was no real difference between adding a penetrant technology to the untreated, no value up or down. And the retentive type technology in that drier side seem to add, or consistently added, between 5 and 10% moisture. Now remember, we're consistently watering these plots, so using a retentive wetting agent with no additional water applied retained an additional 5 to 10% moisture. Now, those kind of retentive wetters are primarily designed to hold more moisture. That's what they're designed to do. And in a world with increasing pressures on water resources, we should be really thinking about how we can use these to help us maintain good surfaces with less water.
Yeah, I mean, that's a real benefit, isn't it? And it's nice to see that the technology really worked in that regard. But did the penetrant wetters add any value, you know, on this dry side?
No, there were no differences at all. I'm not really sure what I was expecting. You know, if you're holding it at 10 to 15% and putting a penetrant wetter on there, would I expect it to get drier? I don't know. I guess I would hope to see a drier surface, but there was no difference, no difference at all from the untreated.
Okay, so what about the less dry side, where the irrigation input was higher and benchmarked at a level to keep the untreated plots at that 25 to 30% volumetric moisture content level?
Now, that was interesting too, Henry, because there was no difference at all across any of them. The retentive wetting agents didn't hold on to more moisture than the untreated, or the penetrants.
Oh, I see what you mean. So in this less dry situation, the penetrant technologies didn't make anything drier, but the retentive materials didn't make anything wetter.
No, we were trialling premium products in here, Henry, and they should all be well designed, and well designed retentive wetting agents shouldn't hold more moisture at higher volumetric moisture contents. And we were surprised in these moisture ranges that the penetrants didn't make things drier, so they had no impact either.
Okay, interesting so far. What about the impact on surface firmness?
Yeah, there were some differences here too, Henry. The firmness was impacted across the whole plots and across all the treatments. But if you look closer, the firmness was directly related to the moisture level rather than the wetting agent. So if you had higher volumetric moisture content, that would equal a lower clay hammer reading.
So the wetting agents in the trial had no negative impact on surface firmness?
Indeed. Once again, the penetrants offered no gain over the untreated.
And in the less dry plots?
No difference between them at all, Henry. So once we get to higher moisture levels, good wetting agents stop holding more, and clay hammered readings, they just revert back to the same.
OK, how about the dry patch then? How did that stack up?
Well, the less dry trial, the one that we hold between 25 to 30%, showed no dry patch throughout the trial, in the retentive or the untreated or the penetrant, which shows the value of just managing a higher level of moisture well and never letting things dry out too much. But if we move over to the drier plot, where we tried to keep the untreated below 20%, we saw some really nice differences here. All the retentive types were significantly better. The penetrant types trended worse than the untreated.
Oh, right. So whilst not statistically valid, there was a trend towards seeing more dry patch in the plots treated with the penetrant.
Yes, at best, the penetrants were exactly the same as the untreated, but there was some evidence that using those penetrant wetters in a dry sward made a dry patch even worse.
Wow, now that is interesting, isn't it? Okay, so what about turf quality then?
Again, strong relationship to moisture levels here. The wetter plots, we saw no differences because we kept things moist enough all year to retain turf quality. In the drier plots, though, we obviously saw the retentive wetters delivering better turf quality as they consistently held better levels of moisture during the drier periods. The untreated and the penetrants, again, statistically exactly the same, but a trend, particularly towards the end of the trial, where the penetrant wetters in the summer were returning much lower quality turf. And that is a real reflection on the dry patch trend we were seeing. We were seeing more dry patch, so therefore turf quality was being rated as lower as well.
Okay, all right. So far, so good. But this is the big one now, Glenn. Did any of the treatments result in greater organic matter accumulation?
In short, Henry, no. The organic matter levels fluctuated throughout the whole season. They were lower in the warmer months. They were higher in the cooler months, probably reflecting microbial activity and breakdown. but no difference between any of the plots, whether it be untreated, retentive, penetrant, wet or dry.
Okay, well, you're going to have to summarise now. There's a lot of information there.
There is. So in short, the learnings from this trial are penetrant type technology in the summer adds no value to turf quality. In fact, there are hints of it being worse than the untreated. Secondly, retentive type wetters will hold more moisture when moisture levels run lower, making the root zone easier to re-wet, which enables us to use less water and maintain healthier turf. But when the soil profile gets wetter, those premium retentive type wetters should not cause the root zone to be wetter than the untreated. And the penetrant types didn't dry the surface out in that situation either. Last thing to add though, greens firmness and turf quality were directly related to moisture content. So these are just tools to help you manage your moisture content.
Very good, Glenn. But, you know, surely no one actually uses penetrant type wetting agents during the summer anyway, Glenn.
Well, I did, Henry.
Ah, why was that?
Well, I thought I was being clever. I thought I was drying them out quicker. I thought I was reducing dry patch. And I thought I was being clever because they were cheaper. But if I think back to my experiences as a course manager, I spent more evenings and weekends than I care to remember hand watering, just trying to maintain turf quality and manage that dry patch than I care to remember. I wish I'd seen this trial back then. And if I'd listened to the data and the information, I think it would have given me some of my life back and made my greens much easier to manage.
Yeah, what a life, Glenn.
What a life, Henry. So, Henry, you're starting early on anthracnose this year.
Yes, I am grasping the agronomic nettle with this one, Glenn.
OK, why is that? The weather and the management stresses, you know, they're on us, but they're not at their peak just yet, maybe still a month or so away. The risk of attack, not high for May, so why are we thinking about it now?
Well, it's because the development of this, you know, and remember, potentially extremely damaging disease later on in the summer might have its root cause or origin at this time. But because the link between the attack and the original cause is, it can be quite a big time difference between them, the link might not be immediately obvious and we might not be seeing the connection. And so unwittingly, you know, set those causes in motion without realizing their significance later on.
We spent a lot of time last year talking about the factors that lead to the development of anthracnose, didn't we? Just talk me through again what are those root causes that might lead to an outbreak later on are.
So anthracnose is a disease that primarily affects annual metagrass or poa annua, but it can also affect bent grasses quite badly as well. The development of the disease is related to the level of plant stress being caused by either environmental or management factors, hot, dry conditions or impoverished turf or unduly intensive levels of management intensity, for instance, most notably excessively low cutting heights.
Yeah, we're back to cutting heights, that old chestnut.
Well, it's just a fact, Glenn. We're not being judgmental here. Anyway, the problem with these abiotic stress factors is that their impact can accumulate or build over time, and they can also compound each other and become super problematic if more than one enters the game at the same time. And this means that perfectly healthy turf can all of a sudden fall off a cliff, and this is usually further exacerbated by anthracnose taking advantage of that stressed turf, and then of course all hell can break loose.
Yes, and as turf managers we're responsible for inflicting or mitigating those stresses, and yeah. So there's a huge amount of management component here, isn't there, when it comes to the development of this disease.
Yes, it's very tempting to say that anthracnose is actually self-inflicted half the time as a result of turf managers continuing to push too hard with the surface preparations in the face of stressful weather conditions, for instance. But it's not quite as simple as that, I should say. It might be that everything is running along nicely with no problems showing and no apparent reason to change anything. And then all of a sudden, everything goes to pot. You know, the accumulation of stresses is really difficult to gauge. Anthracnose also is a sneaky bugger, isn't it? And ready to jump in without any apparent notice.
Yep, I've had that rude awakening before. Everything seems to be going well, and then disease suddenly strikes without any warning, and all of a sudden the surfaces are ridden and they start getting away from you, and grass cover thins, dies back, surface becomes uneven, members start complaining, and you know, it for me it was always a problem with my sand greens. I never seemed to get those ones quite under control. And when you get into that position, all you can do is back off, get the fungicide on, although you're probably too late, because if we're seeing damage, you know, we're probably too late for a fungicide to be as effective as we'd like it, and start generating recovery with a bit of fertilizer in the face of mounting discontent from that vocal element of the membership.
Yeah, the development of anthracnose later on in the summer can, you know, put a real stop to things, to say the least. You know, at the time when everyone is expecting, you know, fast, smooth and true putting surfaces.
So what should we be thinking about now in the month of May to reduce the risk of that happening later on in the season?
Yeah, we are looking over that distant horizon on this one, aren't we? Well, I just think we need to be careful to maintain plant health without building in too much additional stress this early in the year, because stress just builds and builds. And then when those summer stresses kick in a little later on, we start getting that nasty surprise.
Yeah, agree. But it is difficult to create those fast, smooth and true putting surfaces that the golfers are demanding at this time without some intensive management.
Yeah, of course. But what we're talking about here is almost like maintaining a sort of sensible control of the situation at this time, rather than pushing as hard as possible all of the time. We've just got to be thinking of the long game, really, and maybe back off slightly and not just live for today. You know, we need to look onto that horizon, really, if we're going to successfully navigate the whole year.
This reminds me of a story I've got about a par three cross country competition. Do you want to hear it?
Yeah, oh yeah, go on.
So we had, it was the Masters weekend, and we had a par three cross-country competition, which was great fun because I got a chance to set it up and get involved with how we designed and redesigned the course to all the different greens. And we played to all the greens in a really cool and funky way from different angles and made it all connect. Nice short par threes, all ranging from 90 yards up to 190 yards. Really cool pin positions. It was great fun. Everyone got involved, and then we all piled into the clubhouse afterwards to watch the Masters. It was a great event, really good weekend, brilliant atmosphere. But I made a massive mistake that weekend. I tricked those greens up good and proper. You know, we had all the team in, we made a point of bringing the team in, a really great kind of team building exercise. But because I had all the staff in, I had the staff at the weekend to push things super hard. I sneaked those cutting heights down just a quarter of a mil just for the day. What harm can it do? Double cut. What harm can that do? Rolled. What fun. I look back and I hated myself for the rest of my time at that golf club. Why did I do it? There was just no need. I was simply showing off, because I was going to be in the clubhouse that afternoon and I wanted all the pats on the back. I created a massive problem for ourselves, wrapped up around expectations for the rest of the season, just about what we could achieve. So, you know, from an expectation thing point of view, it was stupid. But from an agronomic point of view, it was just suicide.
So what happened later on then?
Look, it was one day of pushing. Let's be real about this. I thought, you know, it's not going to cause me a problem just doing it on one day. I didn't hang on to those speeds. I didn't stick to it. It wasn't an easy year to manage, and I certainly got nailed with anthracnose on those sand greens later on in the season. Was that directly connected to that day? Who knows? But what I do know is the members always wanted surfaces like they were for that weekend rather than what they were getting. So if I was ever in a position where it was, should I back off or should I push? I always edged towards pushing harder, probably more than I should have done.
It's such a tough game, isn't it, greenkeeping? And, you know, pride can get in the way, can't it?
Yes, it can. And yes, it did. look, outside of that, what are the key factors we need to keep an eye on in May and how should we manage them?
Okay. So at this time, the key factors that we need to keep in check are nutrition, moisture management, and surface preparation method. And during May, you know, we just need to make sure that we're not being too silly, Glenn. Simple as that.
Okay. So what is our position with regard to nutrition in May then, Henry?
Well, in the UK and Ireland, May is still a time when we're looking to create that solid foundation for the year, aren't we? Certainly, at the start of the month, we might still be catching those intermittent growth waves that we need to help generate growth and recovery, because consistent growing conditions don't tend to arrive until the end of the month. And so we need to be mindful that we're not yet up to full speed, especially in the early sort of in the early part of the month. And so we'll need to, you know, support the maintenance through this time with some consideration and the use of an appropriate level of supporting nutrition. Now, the level of supporting nutrition will depend on where you're at. You know, you might be ticking along nicely, having got the bulk of your spring work done, or you might still have a lot of work to do in terms of recovery and top dressing, etc. And you know, that will affect the level of nitrogen in particular that you'll need to deploy.
And you were talking about this last month, weren't you? And you were talking about it in terms of kilograms of nitrogen per hectare per week. Just to help us understand how to pitch those nitrogen levels a little bit better to suit your own demands.
Yes. So if you are needing to create a bigger boost to generate, you know, more recovery, you might be aiming to apply on average, let's say, 4 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare per week. But if we need to keep things ticking over slightly more quietly, 2 to 3 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare per week might be better suited to you at this time.
Yeah, it's a tricky period, isn't it? We're just on the verge of settling into our summer routines, but not quite there. But I suppose the big question is, do we apply another granular now or do we move directly into our summer liquids?
Yeah, and I think it should be more about, am I at the right level of nitrogen to support the turf needs through to the end of spring? You know, it could be either, or it could be either liquid or granular. But just make sure that you're not undercooking things, because we need that good, solid foundation in place to work from. And any weaknesses at this time will stop that from happening. But I think the main problem at this time might be that we're all moving into our PGR programs, aren't we? And so would naturally want to apply our nutrient with that, you know, in liquid form as a tank mix, which is fine. We just need to make sure that the move to liquids for that convenience factor is still applying enough nitrogen for the turf needs at that time. In terms of granulars, you know, we've now firmly moved away from cold start, but we do have other formulations that are more suited for use at this time. The Green Master Pro Light Double K CalMag 7014 has been designed for use in early to mid-May to deliver a nice, quiet, immediate response with a slow-release tail. If you applied it at 20 to 30 grams per meter squared, it would deliver 14 to 21 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare over 5 to 6 weeks. And so is right in that 3 to 4 kilograms of nitrogen per week territory. You know, you just need to pick the right application rate for you. The Sierraform GTK step 6027 is also in the same territory to get you through May and into June with that solid foundation in place. But if you are able to settle into your liquids early, then Vitalnova Stress Buster and the Green Master Liquid CalMag Tank Mix, 20 litres of each, would put you at about 2 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare per week if applied fortnightly. And of course, this really is the perfect partner for Primo, isn't it? What do you reckon, Glenn? You know, we've already talked about it, but we will be in our primo programmes, won't we, you know, during May?
Yeah, it still depends a little bit on how you're sitting with that recovery work, maybe from winter disease or renovations. But all things being equal, I reckon that if the weather behaves, we'll be at 3 weekly intervals at the start of the month, moving down to kind of fortnightly intervals by the end of the month. It just depends on conditions a little bit.
Yeah, and Primo really does have its, you know, own stress mitigation properties, doesn't it? And so it's really good to have it in the game at this time. You know, our friend with benefits, Glenn.
Yeah, there's lots of benefits associated with using Primo, as we discussed last month. Great stress mitigation benefits, really friendly on POA, all those kind of things. But let's not forget the rider.
Yeah, I mean, that's another perfect partner, isn't it, for our fortnightly tank mix. And again, good to have in place to help mitigate that potential light or ultraviolet light stress that can really start ramping up at this time and add to that bank of accumulating stresses that we're so worried about.
Yep, there's lots of stress mitigation tools that we can build in. And I think we'll talk about the use of HiCure, which is our amino acid technology, next month, because once we start getting into June, we really do start to move into some different stresses. And, you know, heat stress becomes in the game, much more regular maintenance, all of those things are there. And we did some really nice work, trial work, looking at HiCure and FR321 on anthracnose last year with some really nice results, and I'll share that with you next month. But May isn't about fungicides. May is about reducing stress.
But the key, getting back to nutrition, the key with the background nutrition is to just set our inputs at the right level for this important time. You know, we need to be able to prepare our surfaces for play, but without overdoing it, but also without underdoing it. We don't want to start piling on the pressure at this stage, and at the same time trying to get away with using as little fertiliser as possible. You know, it's just a balance that we've got to strike, because, you know, undercooking it with too little nutrient can result in big payback later on. Essentially, we just need to stick to our nitrogen budget plan and keep it constantly under review. You know, running too lean in May can lead to big problems in July, Glenn, can't it?
Okay, so I think it's worth thinking about moisture management as well. Is that another potential source of stress?
Well, you talked about it earlier, haven't you? But yeah, this is another agronomic factor that we're looking to position ourselves within reasonable upper and lower limits. And this is something that we can only do with an accurate moisture probe, because it really isn't possible to accurately gauge the soil moisture content visually or by touch.
Yeah, I tried that. An accurate moisture probe is essential greenkeeping tool in this day and age, and we've got to commit the time to using it. It's no use gathering dust on your bookshelf. Take it out, go and use it. So when we're out there using it, Henry, what sort of targets do you think we should be aiming at?
Well, that depends on the prevailing conditions, you know, and the root zone types and sward species composition, etc. Many fine grass dominated link situations will be able to target 10 to 15% volumetric moisture content or even below, whereas annual meadowgrass dominated parkland greens would become stressed and turn to toast at those levels, and their target might be in that 20 to 25% range. I think the key really is just not let the greens or the soil moisture content drop below the point of no return, you know, when dry patch starts to develop. And so keeping a close eye on the situation is required, especially if those temperatures start to ramp up.
Yeah, and we've talked about monitoring already, haven't we? And we spoke about that in April. And just not letting that moisture stress become an issue on the quiet, only just to reveal itself in full force on that first hot day of the year, which will probably land in May. And I think this is where that, you know, that penetrant retentive trial I spoke about earlier is so important, because using the wrong type of wetting agent technology could land you in so much trouble in this year before you even realise it.
Couldn't agree more. You know, your choice of technologies is vitally important. Yeah, and when stresses begin to combine, as they as they can do at this time, then the turf can really fall off a cliff. We need to just keep an eye on the situation and manage accordingly. And of course, you know, well, we go back to it. This is where the right surfactant technologies can really help us, because those retentive materials slow down the drying process and speed up re-wetting, and also help prevent the development of localized dry spot. And we both have some great technologies in this area, don't we, with Calibra and TriSmart, because the trials show always that all wetting agents really aren't the same. And for our greens, where the jeopardy is so high, we don't want to be using cheap substandard technologies.
Yes, both ICL and Syngenta conduct a lot of trial work, both in-house and independently. And both our technologies perform extremely well when put to the test. And we do test them amongst the very best that are out there, and we're as good as anything. But they do need to be used preventatively to get the best out of them. We do not want that root zone drying out. And I would say just avoid those cheaper materials, because we look at them in our trials, and some of them are being touted about with unsubstantiated claims.
Yes. You know, the jeopardy is too high to risk using dodgy materials.
So we're being preventative and attentive with our nutrition and our irrigation strategies, and we're trying to maintain our turf within agronomically reasonable parameters. What about those surface preparations? How do we keep them agronomically reasonable in order to prevent the turf going pop at a later date?
Well, that's probably easier said than done, isn't it, Glenn? Because golfers don't tend to understand the concept of agronomically reasonable, do they?
No, they just want fast and true surfaces, and they don't really care how you do it.
Well, no, and that might be in our favour, actually, mightn't it, if we approach it in an agronomically reasonable way. I think it all starts with discussing and clearly defining the required playing quality standards for both routine and competition play, and making sure that they're set at a reasonable level and that they're achievable and not just a professional tour standard for 8 months in the year. I think we need to get the stimp meters out, and we need to agree what suits your greens for those different occasions.
Yeah, we touched on that a bit last month, and what it takes to prepare a course for professional play. And it's generally not sustainable for more than a week or two, even without a huge amount of extra resourcing. I think we're going to try and get a guest in to talk about tournament prep, aren't we, and sustainable standards.
Yes, we are. And that should be really interesting and enlightening.
OK, so what is the key for May?
Well, every balance is different, and so we will need to generalise. But suffice it to say, if you're pushing too hard with your heights of cut in May, then you will probably run into anthracnose trouble later on in the year.
Yeah, and we hark back to my chat with Tom in February. Bench settings on those newer and heavier cutting units are actually a lot lower in the turf than you realise. So get those prisms out and go and see where you're really at.
Yeah, because the actual cutting height, you know, that's not an exact measurement, is it? And it can be difficult to say what our minimum should be. But the agronomic maxim has always been to try and hit our performance targets with as high height of cut as possible. But that doesn't mean that we're compromising on playing qualities.
Yes, and to remember that we're still only in May, and so we probably shouldn't be at our summer intensity just yet, especially at the start of the month, and only approaching those levels of management towards the end, where those temperatures come along and we can really start to rely on them.
Don't get sucked into going all in too soon. There is always a slightly less intensive position that you can take. But this is when agronomists always get ignored, because everyone thinks that the greens should be at their very best by now, even though growth hasn't yet fully established. And so everyone takes liberties, as you said earlier.
OK, so what is the answer then?
Well, my mindset changed when we started scoring and measuring putting surface smoothness, because that slight shift in focus away from the speed of the greens was actually an agronomic game changer, Glenn. It was a real light bulb moment.
Ooh, an agronomic game changer, Henry. You're going to have to expand on that one for me.
Well, it's simple. You know, if your primary focus is just on green speed or the length a ball rolls from a standardised delivery, like the stimp meter, then your management focus tends to be on low cutting heights, which is very stressful and difficult to sustain agronomically and can result in nasty stuff like anthracnose.
Okay.
But if your focus is on surface smoothness because you understand that a ball will roll further... or the surface will become quicker when it rolls over a smoother surface, then your management focus will be slightly less on cutting height and more on things like top dressing, rolling, brushing, the use of plant growth regulators, good nutrition, moisture management, all those things. I'm not saying that a speed focus ignores those things, but the emphasis is slightly different. If you're focused on smoothness, you are probably being less intensive or aggressive with your preparations, and that slight shift in emphasis can make all the difference, especially if we are trying to avoid damaging agronomic outcomes like anthracnose later on in the summer. And that is why it's a game changer, Glenn.
And Michael Woods has got on board with this one as well. He was talking about that recently, wasn't he? And I know that he referred back to your bobble test that you and Richard Windows put together. What you're saying then is, from your agronomic perspective, that your mindset and focus going into the main playing season is key. If you're trying to avoid things like anthracnose developing later on in the season, you've got to change your mindset now.
Yeah, quite a lot of agronomic outcomes originate with attitude, Glenn. You know, that they're self-inflicted.
Okay, so we're keeping fertiliser inputs and soil moisture management in safe areas. We're supporting that with the right technologies. We're working towards clearly defined and agronomically reasonable performance targets and trying not to go at it hell for leather all year.
Yeah, and you just don't go too soon. It's only May, Glenn. There's a long way to go before we get to ease off again in the autumn.
It's easier said than done, Henry.
Yeah, but we still need to say it, Glenn, because pushing too hard does nobody any good.
Now, that is true, Henry. Wise words indeed.
So that's it, Glenn. And so May turns out to be a really tricky month, doesn't it?
Yep, we all have to do it, and the weather might not be playing ball.
Yes, and there might be some stresses in the game to really hold things back.
It's a time when we need to box clever, because summer is just around the corner.
Hopefully, Glenn.
Well, good luck, everyone, and looking forward to catching up with you all next month.
When the living will be easy, Glenn. Oh, and not forgetting, Glenn, that May is Eurovision month.
Oh, love a bit of Eurovision. Who's your money on, Henry?
Well, the favourites undoubtedly will be Ukraine and Sweden. But don't bet against Italy being up there. And the Netherlands and Austria are also good outsiders. So basically, it could be anyone.
Incredibly helpful, Henry. Thank you.